Welcome to Has Been Airsoft. As usual, I'm your host, Megalo. We have a returning guest, although he's a regular. We have with us...
He's a regular returning guest. It's Demo. Never been on the show before. Never been done before.
And next to him...
It's Dave. Still here. Still recording. Still taking over the world.
And the prodigal son has returned from his bromantic camping trip.
Oh, God. So...
It's jungle, you know who it is. So let's dive into this fucking shit wagon this week.
The cancerous nonsense that is the airsoft industry.
Yeah.
Now just to define.
And how it airsoft, sucks the soul out of you.
By airsoft industry, you're talking sales, working fields, like actually being someone who makes this hobby happen.
Salesman, referee, yes. Technician.
Forum moderator.
D, all of the above. Yeah, we're gonna kind of take the mask off because there's a lot of people that I think romanticize for whatever fucking reason you have working in the airsoft industry, and we're here to kind of direct you maybe away from that terrible life choice that most people here tonight have made.
Yes.
So
some people have stayed far away from it.
You're a smarter man than I am.
Yeah. So. I mean, getting into it, like we said, it's kind of a cancerous topic. Like, yeah, it's fun. It's something that you want to do. It's like, oh man, I love playing. I want to do this. I want to work in the shop.
I want to make money off the hobby that I love.
Nah.
Well, so you two, but the way you two got into it was,
let's do a quick background.
Yeah, because that's gonna color everyone's opinion of it.
The combined experience here, and we'll just do a round table. I worked in the airsoft industry from starting Strikeforce to finally walking away for probably about 3-ish years.
I think it was about 3 years.
Yeah, right around there. So what about you, Dave?
Starting Strikeforce back in 09 to up until recently, where it was like a two-year hiatus from there.
Yeah.
Or something like that, and then
where you were a
another
real
year. Where I was a real person.
I'm a real boy!
that's 4 or 5 years, something like that, mixed in with that. So, I mean, collectively, a long, long time. But as John and I both stated, we pretty much started Strikeforce.
Yeah, we'll go down that rabbit hole.
That's a later, but it just puts in, you guys got in on the ground floor of a store.
Yep, ground floor, like, from the very beginning to nothing to all the way to a mature thing, but... Demo,
how did you actually end up working at Strikeforce?
It's just like any other job. I already worked in sales and retail, an old shop in Massapequa before, so I'm just like, I had that thought everyone else did, why not work at, the place where my, favorite hobby is, just, because I already know a lot about it. Do a lot of research on, all the different types of, new airsoft, items that come out. So I'd be perfect for, sales and whatnot there because I have a lot of information. That was about, 3 years ago, maybe a little more than that.
Wow.
Yeah, because you're recently separated from...
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Voluntarily.
That is true.
Yeah.
Smart man.
Yeah.
Voluntarily.
Literally what I've been telling you since I knew you.
I wasn't booted out. I left on my own accord.
All right.
Now, I, smart enough, never worked in Airsoft, even though I was offered one of the tech jobs at Strikeforce, and I said no.
On multiple occasions.
Yeah. I told them down each time.
Well, that's good that you chose not the life of indentured servitude.
Pretty much.
I guess the closest I had to working was when we had that terrible local Facebook group that I was brought in to be an admin of to kind of clean it up a little bit.
We'll reference that by name.
We can touch on that later.
Yeah.
ILQ?
Yeah.
Something like that. So to kind of give a background, as Dave and I stated, we straight up helped with the owner at the time start Strikeforce. So we're saving the full history for another episode, but...
Yeah, that's going to be a good episode. You might want to stay tuned to that one.
Yeah, we're gonna literally pour alcohol down their throats, and we're going to do a straight up drunk history Strikeforce sports.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
But yeah, Dave and I started at the same time along with... two other people, literally helping build the initial field, all the panels. That's what we were doing, getting the word out, getting the buzz, doing some initial marketing research. all the way through opening up the first brick and mortar store, the field, seeing the rapid expansion on the island, how that shifted the scene. Like, we were there ground floor all the way through till up until recently. Everyone at this table has had various, you know, steps along the way.
Yep.
So what we kind of wanted to do is unpack a lot of the mysticism behind working in Airsoft, because a lot of people don't realize how much it actually sucks to do that, even though it sounds great from, you know, afar. So,
and we can really editorialize this, because, like, to any hobby, getting involved in your hobby as your profession is not a great idea.
Oh yeah, no, I would say, like, in general, it doesn't matter what hobby, it's not unique to Airsoft, don't try and make money off a hobby you like doing in your free time. And that's, we'll go down that road later, but again, it's in general, let your hobby be what you spend your money on, don't try and make money off of it.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
yeah, that goes for most things. I mean, my previous job where I worked, you know, had a decent amount to do with, like, ice hockey, and that was my sport at the time. I never hated it, just hated the people that walked in. I mean, like, I'm sure if I was a referee, I'd probably think differently. But other than that,
what do you have to hate about Gordon Bombay?
He walked away from his team on multiple occasions. Why would you not hate Gordon Bombay?
All right, that's fair.
Come on.
All right.
Let's be real here. But we'll not get into a sports podcast. That's not what we're here for.
No, all we're right. here for Airsoft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just looking for a good time.
Yeah, just looking for a good time. And pretty much how working in this industry is, if you saw any of our social media... is great, but it's also extremely cancerous.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So actually let's come back in a little bit. So what did you actually do at Strikeforce for people who never went to Strikeforce, or for people who have gone there since you've left? Because you've been gone from Strikeforce a long time.
Yeah, I left somewhere right around late 2011, 2012.
I want to say it was 11.
Yeah, about 2011. Yeah.
Okay.
Because it was like a year on after the field itself opened, and the field opened in 10, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Yep. So over my tenure at Strikeforce, from when the brick and mortar store opened in...
But you didn't have tenure.
Over my tenure, there, different word.
Let me get that spray bottle.
Yeah.
It's upstairs.
Damn it.
So I started in the pro shop, just kind of doing generic pro shop stuff. There was a time I also dabbled in the field to kind of fill in, running some sessions. Ultimately, I kind of wound up as the unofficial pro shop manager.
Yeah, because that's the role that, like, I picture you in when I think of when you worked at Strikeforce.
Yeah. So I had kind of a good overall view of what the business was at Strikeforce. But yeah, I'd say it is fair to say that I was kind of the pro shop manager during my time there. Much to the chagrin of people that won't be named. That's just kind of what I was doing. I mean, everyone there kind of could fill in as needed just by design, because it's a small business. But Dave, what was your kind of roles and responsibilities?
During which time that he worked?
During which time period? Because
go for broke both.
So I kind of got stuck actually with both tours at Strikeforce, with having a job and then being held responsible for everyone else's job too. So, like, my job, let's say I was hired for one thing, I was expected to do four other jobs, too. So, like, there was no, like, actual official title for me. It was pretty much just, hey, get this done. Because when you had left, I took over your position as pro shop manager, and I actually was told not to do my job many, many occasions. Like, I would put together orders, and just everything was thrown out the window.
Don't feel bad. It still happens. Like,
oh, yeah.
Whether you're there or not, like, there's always going to be either one or two guys that multiple jobs thrown at.
Oh, I'm not worried about that. It's just the fact of you hired me to do one job, but you don't let me do that job.
You had one job.
Pretty much, but was told to do all these other jobs. Like, you know, going back to what I was saying, is putting together orders for for our distributors. Let's get, you know, one of these and two of those. Turns out the order would come back. Like, I would pass it up the chain, and the order would come back with six of these, 14 of those, 37 of these, nothing of anything that we needed. Yeah.
A lot of product that wouldn't sell.
A lot of product that wouldn't sell. So,
did just, we javelins?
Yeah.
Damn shame.
Damn shame.
We have a whole fucking floor display of javelins.
Yeah.
Someone decided that someone, was a good idea.
That was a great idea. That's that back room tendering.
Yeah. What about those 10 Sistema Tech 9 things?
Oh, yeah. Those two.
The Echo ones?
No. It's a Red Wolf custom.
Red Wolf thing. They use PTW cylinders or something like that. They're like little Tech 9s.
Weird.
They're literally, they're Tech 9s that takes a PTW cylinder. They're a Red Wolf custom.
All the things they could have put... PTWs, I'm not going to get into it, but... All
right.
It has to be a fucking Tech 9.
Yeah, it's... Right. The whole idea...
not buy one.
Yeah.
The idea behind
like
it, we wouldn't...
$550 or something like that.
We literally would not let him do that. Like, morally... morally, I would not let him do that.
But Doug's such a Tech 9 guy.
He is. But just...
Gun and rapper.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's true. So, I mean, that kind of squares away what was supposed to be on my job, but I was pretty much held accountable for everything that had nothing to do with my job.
All right. And, yeah. Demo, so you got hired as sales, right, and you moved to tech?
Yes. Okay. I was hired as sales just because, you know, my knowledge on all the airsoft products, like, I was like one of those guys who would, you know, scroll through forums, you know, look at new information.
I was that guy once.
Yep. Look at new information and what comes out, like all the little parts for airsoft guns. Because at that time, I was into teching too. Actually, my entire airsoft career was into working on my own guns, but nothing advanced. Up until maybe Strikeforce. So
that probably makes you the only tech who became a better tech after they started working at Strikeforce.
Yeah.
Probably.
I would say so. Like, I started at, like, just a level where, you know, I work on my own guns... But nothing advanced, to kind of fix them.
Change a spring.
Yeah.
Replace the gear set, but not do like an awesome shim job.
Yeah.
Now, Demo, in your course of teching, would you ever, say, recommend an upgrade path for someone that's not what they wanted, but would make it easier on you because you wouldn't have to fix the gun more?
I've done that, you know, a lot. In my career as...
So what you're saying is you might have been the kind of person who would recommend... A Bravo Red Piston and an Amp High Torque motor?
For like
anything that's reliable
ever.
And realistic. Like, when I was working in the pro shop...
High-speed build.
It was kind of like the unofficial tech, because I knew gas guns pretty well also. So I would tell people, like,
yeah, there's
hey,
always a
I'm
sucker like that.
I'm looking to upgrade, but I want this FPS out of this gun. It's like, sir, that's a D-Boys. Like, if you want... you know, the headache to go away of, you know, this thing constantly breaking, I would suggest get another gun because this thing's not going to last you.
Okay.
I was the guy of information, just like, I try to be realistic with people. In that sense, I was a pretty bad salesman because, you know, whenever I try to sell...
Well, there's a difference between being realistic with people and literally guiding someone down a path to make your life easier. And there is definitely a certain tech at one point that would do that to every customer that would... try and bother his time about teching.
Yes.
Yeah, so I would just...
Someone raised in the ways of old that involve as little output as possible.
Yeah. The thing is, when we were... I can remember at this one point with the old owner, when we were out of stock on, like, a certain product, maybe it was, like, the G&G combat machines. Like, those are my favorite, you know, beginner-level guns because, you know, they were fairly reliable for what they were. And, well, more reliable than all the other beginner...
I mean, I was going to say, for the price point, the G&G combat machine is the best.
You can't go wrong with that.
Yeah,
you really
can't.
As, like, an aside, although you probably are not first getting into airsoft if you're listening to this, but, like, if you're first getting into airsoft and you happen to be listening to this, a combat machine's not a bad way to go.
Yeah.
No, just save your money and do that till you decide you actually want to get deeper
into
the sport.
You buy it at a local store.
It's like that, or maybe, if you can swing one of, like, the D-Boys AKs.
Yeah,
that's if you want an AK. Yeah, most people don't really want AKs, but that's why we stock so many M4s. Idiots. But, you know, I digress. It's, when I try to sell people something, I try to sell them something that's not going to come back to us, like, right away. Like the Echo 1s did. The Echo 1s always had trigger posts that break.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly.
Yep.
The Echo 1 / JGs.
No,
Same gun, by the way. If you're ever confused about that, JG and Echo 1 are the same fucking gun.
Oh, we're going to get to that in the next topic.
Yeah, that gets... Because Airsoft is probably the most notorious market for rebranding.
Yeah.
When I was trying to sell someone a beginner gun, I'm just like, you know what? If I might make a recommendation, wait till we get this particular gun in stock. Come back a week from now. Yeah. And it was a day where we're kind of slow on sales, so I'm just like, so if you want something reliable, please get this thing. Don't buy this.
This is where, from like a customer service standpoint, that is a better attitude to have.
Yeah. And then afterwards, you know, the facility manager and the owner at the time, you know, had to bring me to their office just like, hey, if, you know, someone wants a particular gun, you have to sell it to them. Just, you know, upsell it.
And if they ask you for an opinion, you're doing them a disservice if you don't give them your opinion.
They did ask for an opinion. I'm just like, what would you prefer? Like, I prefer this product. So just like, wait for it to come in.
You know, if someone came in and said, I want that, you know, JG piece of trash off the wall, and you're like, no, 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 you should wait till we get a combat machine in stock, that's you doing the business wrong. But if someone says, hey, I'm looking for a beginner gun, I see you have that cheap JG on the wall behind you, and, you know, what's your opinion? Should I get that, or do you guys have something else?
Yeah, if
and
I remember say, well, correctly...
We're getting combat machines back in stock soon, because we go through a billion of them.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, like, they came in initially just looking for a gun, but, like, the dad wanted the opinion on it. The kid was excited for the Echo 1 or something like that.
Right, well, it's the dad's money, so he's like, don't spend my money recklessly to make my kid happy.
Here's this gun. Like, it's not in stock. Here's the tag. I'll show you pictures of it. This is the gun I like and prefer if you're looking to play here. Plus, you don't have to get it downgraded.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always came shooting my 400.
See, and to me, like, that is a better service for the customer. Because they came in there not looking to buy a particular gun. They didn't know what product they wanted. And you matched them with a better product.
Yeah.
And I think they came in, like, 2 weeks later and picked up a combat machine.
So you still got a sale. You're only going to get one AEG sale out of them at that time.
Yeah, it was a weekday,
anyway.
Too. Like,
and you probably had a better margin on the combat machine. But we'll get into that later.
Well, it's a Wednesday. I want to go to Strikeforce and buy a gun.
Yeah.
Who thinks that?
Well, since you brought it up, margins in general in the airsoft industry are pretty fucking horrendous.
Yep.
And most people don't realize it. I don't know if it's because they're just absolute spurboards.
So I wonder if it depends on what industry they come from. If they come from any at all, like on the purchasing side.
But that's apples to oranges. That's the thing. Like, I'm not going to take any other hobbies that I have and be like, I know the margins over here are, you know, 200% markup, and it's like, right, that's, I don't know about paintball or any other ones, but like, that's that hobby you're doing. This is airsoft. It's different. And like, full disclosure, at the time when we were there, markups on AEGs were maybe 20%.
Yeah.
Hasn't really gotten much better.
They have,
and that's buying in cases from a distributor.
None of that. That's raw cost. That's not including every other aspect of actually having something in stock. Like, it costs you money to have something on the shelf.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's just your inventory cost, you're carrying it. Like, we don't need to get in, like, a whole accounting breakdown, but, like...
Some people might to really understand what's going on.
Oh, but, yeah, well, that's...
So, like, for me, it is a shock, and it's not a shock at the same time, like, what the markup is, because coming from working in the auto industry, you know, on parts in the auto industry, depending on what it is, it's 100% markup.
Right, and that's, like, similar to airsoft. I'd say that's the best parallel is, think of, like, the auto industry as buying a car. The margins on buying a car are next to nothing.
Oh, they're slim.
The margins on buying an airsoft gun are pretty slim. Parts for an airsoft gun, huge markup. But granted, you're talking about, there's this $20, you know, bucking that we may sell you that we only paid $8 for it. So the markup's huge, but at the end of the day, you're only making
$12.
$12 profit, you know?
It looks
it's always a small...
It looks great from a percentage standpoint, but it's not great from an actual overall standpoint.
Right, from an accounting bottom line standpoint.
From the shop, I think the only thing that had, like, decent markup were... I mean, this goes for pretty much everything around this particular item was clothing.
Yeah.
Clothing always has a good markup because it's incredibly packable, right? Like, when it gets shipped to you. So you're able to save
a
lot.
Huge order from Rothko came in one box.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I was about to say.
That saves
you didn't have to pay for shipping because Rothko's on the island too. Yep. So we could go and pick it up.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, and that saves you transport costs. That's why you're able to get that markup. Like, what AEG actually, and I think we already said it, but like, the combat machine probably was your highest markup. Because just the volume you guys bought in.
The volume that we bought in, that's what got us the best. So I think their margins may have been touching 30%.
Okay.
But granted, that's our tier. Because we weren't even the top tier, even for that gun.
Really?
Like, the biggest wholesalers and distributors, like Evike, Airsoft GI, and some of the big online e-tailers, got better prices than we did.
Well, because they also double as distributors.
Right. Yeah. So that's where they get a different pricing tier. But for ours, it was for the combat machine line was about 30% markup.
Yeah, because I want to say when I bought mine to make the mid-length monstrosity out of, I think I got it for like, I think they were selling for 120, and you guys gave it to me like at cost for around 100.
Yeah, it was probably
because at that point there. I was also helping you guys sell guns and shit. So threw that to me at cost. We gotta edit a name out, but threw that to me at cost.
I'm not editing shit out.
Yep.
Okay. he's not involved anymore. He sold it.
Yeah, true. He's just involved with turtles.
Turtles and the protection of turtles.
Yep.
What is he gonna go all David Carradine and try and strangle bait?
To the turtles.
All right.
I hope the turtles do that to him.
Let's bring that
weird.
Let's bring it back to shore. But since you brought up like wholesalers, what most people don't realize is there's only a very specific distributors and wholesalers that are available to use. Unless you're going to try and go direct to overseas.
But, which is very hard to do.
It's
incredibly hard to do, and the margins are even worse. Yeah. Unless you're trying to get a rare product that the U.S. distributors don't carry.
Or unless you're buying by the container like a distributor does.
Yeah, exactly. So you're either talking about laying out tens of thousands of dollars to get an order from one of the overseas distributors, wholesalers, I should say. You're buying from various U.S. distributors. So it was like Jag Precision. It was...
Yeah, none of those exist anymore.
What?
Really?
Jag's still there, but that... Spartan got
swallowed
up.
Spartan's the way of the dodo, and they're done.
So what actually happened to Spartan?
It got swallowed up by a different company. Think of how
Spartan got bought by Palco, right?
Palco, I believe
Palco
it was.
Palco in their slow, steady march to take over Airsoft.
Think of it kind of like how the auto industry is. It's you have one giant, he's going to swallow up this one, he's going to swallow up that one, they're just going to put desks under him. Essentially, that's just what happened.
So does Spartan still exist and they operate under Palco?
They are a desk, to the best of my knowledge,
okay,
comparative to a huge distributor in which they were. Classic Army, I think they distribute out themselves now.
Oh, wow.
They're kind of getting back into it.
With some exceptions.
CIA always did way back in the day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like back in the Elias days.
They went to Spartan to distribute. Which a lot of airsoft companies do this. The wholesalers would give out specific guns with specific licenses. Like VFC is probably the worst offender of this. Or the best defender.
Now VFC and Elite Force are kind of tied at the hip. So it's like anything that Elite Force is like, hey, we have the trades. And VFC is like, fine, you can call it your gun, even though we're the OEM for it. Yep. But
yeah. And even though everyone knows it's VFC.
Jag Precision has VFC. Spartan has... Spartan, I think. Whatever Palco Spartan is.
Umarex has VFC.
Yeah. Umarex has VFC. They have VFC out like the 300 BK series.
Yeah.
Like everyone has VFC.
Pretty much.
Every distributor has like that high-end...
Now it's just kind of turning to what licenses the various distributors own. Yeah. And then whatever
you're
OEM...
You're matching up to whatever OEM makes the product and makes it the price point you're looking for.
Yeah. Right. I mean, KWA is kind of the only one that I know of, because I've been out for a hot minute, that kind of is their own distributor.
Yeah. With most of their product line, the exception of like the MP7 or G36.
That's because KWA.
Well, because those are licensed products.
Yeah, that's because KWA still does the thing, you know, but they inherited from KSC, where like they set up a company, everything short of production, in the country they're selling.
Yeah.
But KWA kind of started scumming the stores too.
Well, there was a big lawsuit with KWA.
Well, no, they started selling direct to customer at a cheaper cost than were selling to store.
Well, that might be the lawsuit that came in, because they got, like, their old, like, CFO is getting sued by them and had to step down, like, forcibly removed for terrible accounting practices.
It's possible.
So it might be something like that, where, depending on how that revenue was shown on their books versus what the distributors...
Yeah, because within the past 6 months or so, they decided, hey, we're going to go direct to customer. Let's say a product that they would sell a store would be... You know, whatever the retail cost is, $330. You could buy it direct from KWA for like $320.
Oh shit!
That makes
I'm very
confused.
Made no sense.
There's a few companies who do that. Crytek being
another one.
Crytek, I think from them, it's like the same price it is in every store.
It was like a little cheaper.
Because doesn't Crytek enforce MAP?
Yeah, they do.
They enforce MAP, but they also try and do kind of think of like with Apple. They were very price locked. It was like, this is what it is. There's nothing we can do about it. Sorry. The end. Okay. And so Crytek kind of, they stuck with their own devices, essentially. So they're kind of, they're afloat. KWA is still afloat. They're still doing that. I mean, they had, KWA and Crytek have the bad blood because of the Chris Vector.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That whole nonsense, and the fact that Crytek pretty much stole 3/4 of KWA staff.
Yeah.
So that actually, I have a quick question, because I got to drop a name you haven't heard in a while. Which way did Alizar go? Because he still, I still owe him a kick in the nuts.
I think he is at Crytek.
Of course.
I believe him and Mike and there's like 4 or 5 other people just jumped off KWA and right into Crytek.
He made me a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Regarding when the recoils came out, and I like looked at some pictures, and I was like, oh, this is exactly this. He's like, no, it doesn't work that way. That's not how it works at all. And so I told him, you know, if it works that way, I'm going to kick you in the dick.
All right.
So I still got to kick him in the dick.
Fair yeah, enough. He. I'm pretty sure he's over at Crytek.
Okay.
But yeah, it's.
Well, I gotta go to Shot and kick him in the dick.
Well, it's funny. Yeah. The guys who make the best products always have like the shadiest fucking business practices.
Well, Crytek kind of has that luxury. Can we please mute cell phones?
I did.
Crytek is owned by Chris Firearms. It's yes. Their airsoft division.
Yeah.
So they have a humongous bankroll behind them that they can kind of. Do things like that.
Yep.
But it's also like U.S. wholesalers go. The various like big e-tailers like e-bike also has distributor accounts to a lot of smaller companies, and most people don't realize that. And that's why e-bike is this fucking giant that you can't fuck with. Like they are the Wu-Tang Clan of the airsoft industry.
They're buying for their own sales, but then they're also functioning as a distributor for what? Right. Most of Northeast and most of Southern California?
Just... most of the U.S.
Most of the U.S.
I thought they were pretty regional.
Because they have such strong ties with... Yeah, they have such strong ties with all the overseas distributors that they get those volume pricing that they can turn around, buy it on their dime, sell it at a markup to them, and then have wholesale accounts to smaller airsoft outlets that can't maybe afford the good tier pricing.
Yeah, you got to think a lot of the... like, think maybe even 1/2 to 3/4 of the containers... that come in with those products are all going to e-bike or GI.
Yeah.
And they're kind of divvied out from there. But it's a lot of that is... a lot of the distributors, since they are kind of being bought up...
So e-bike, if you wanted to push e-bike and GI out of the distributor market, how much capital would you need?
Millions.
More than you could...
millions.
Yeah.
Because just... I mean, just the sheer product to buy, like... just to buy out and bankroll their warehouse, to shut them down. You're
not fully buy out their warehouse, but to be able to come up...
No, but to have enough capital to literally be like, your stock is no longer sufficient. I'm taking over your supply lines.
Yeah.
You would need millions. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, they're all tied together.
It's funny, because in my head, I still think of e-bike as like some podunk store, but like they must have like some serious accounting.
Have you seen
pictures of their warehouses and stuff?
Their warehouse and their... storefront?
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's like the size of your block.
Jesus Christ.
It's ridiculous. It's crazy. Think of it honestly, B&H.
Oh, wow.
But for airsoft.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
They are the big boy on the block.
Yeah, they're huge, and they got bigger. They're getting bigger each year.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
I think it's fair to say that e-bike has... definitely eclipsed GI, and I think GI is kind of on life support before e-bike just finally takes enough business away from them.
Yeah. But I think GI, from last I had heard, GI was kind of looking to possibly fire back and had some things in the works.
Okay.
To do some things.
Trust me, I would love it if that was the case.
Because competition is good. Competition is like a requirement for an industry to actually succeed.
Yeah.
Yeah, because otherwise, like, if e-bike is just the one monopolizer of online airsoft sales in the U.S. and distributor, like, that is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Pretty much. And it's, unfortunately, kind of heading in that direction.
I've seen it. It's...
especially within the past 5 years. It's been...
well, just look at the partnerships that e-bike has compared to the partnerships that GI has.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they are so embedded in the fabric of... the national scene compared to GI, all the local stores that I can think of.
Well, now it used to be the complete opposite.
Yeah.
GI. Well, now
it was a matter
of,
all right, you know, Jag, Spartan, whoever doesn't have it, let's call. We had like distributor accounts with GI and e-bike. which one of you two have the product, and we'll order from you.
Pretty much.
You know, if we need something, like, you know, we're short on something, we need it going in the weekend. But
yeah.
Speaking of weekends,
let's
talk about working airsoft retail on the weekends.
Oh, God.
My least loaded.
How bad was that?
It was, honestly, it wasn't bad up until the field opened at Strike Force.
A lot of it came down to also who you were working with.
Yeah,
because a 16-17 hour day after the field had opened on a Saturday.
Oh my god, I hated it.
It was not
so hard.
It wasn't terrible, but it all depended on who you were working with.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because you had certain
Fuck working a 16 hour day.
Yeah,
you know, it was literally get there at 10 to open it up, and you wouldn't close till the field session would run till 1 a.m. So you weren't leaving there till about 1:30
at least. And if you weren't one of the first people to bolt out the door, you were stuck waiting for the field to close up, because majority of the field staff didn't have keys. Like, there was only so many key holders.
That's a managerial issue there.
There was reasons for that, just because
field
staff, they don't really need to have that kind of responsibility, so it's like you should have someone more senior being there to lock up, but it's, when you're working those kind of hours, and especially when you have certain princesses that refuse to, you know, work more than 8 hours a day, it really just kind of is a great recipe.
You mean people who believe in their own workers' rights?
No, I mean, it's like, I didn't really have an issue doing that many hours, but it's when you have this kind of core group putting in 12-hour days on the reg, and then other people are like, no, I'm this department. I don't need to work the same hours the retail shop does.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's it was just a, you know, a good recipe for friction between coworkers, but it was
There certainly was.
I tell you, those 14-hour days were something. Like, especially Saturdays.
Yeah, those were the worst. Saturdays are a fucking grind.
Actually, you know what? The most recent Saturdays hold nothing to what they used to be.
Really?
Nothing. Like, they were...
Is it that it's gotten easier for you?
No, it was literally there was not as many customers.
Okay.
Because obviously you used to see the mass houses that used to come in all the time.
I don't know. Before I went to the tech shop, it used to be a madhouse. I mean, I don't know the madhouses compared to yours.
Mm. Yeah. No, this was days where...
I've gotten lines out the door before.
Yeah. Dave used to go out on smoke breaks. I'd be there hanging out. I would sell guns for Dave while he was out on the smoke break. And he would go back to the register to finish the sale.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
And these were like loyal customers that we trust. Yeah, well, these were smoke breaks, so nobody could say anything to them.
I just worked throughout the whole thing.
Most people didn't. And there were times where we had to eat our dinner or eat our lunch helping a customer, or like take a couple bites, go make a sale, come back.
Right.
Take a couple bites, go make a sale, and come back. It was crazy.
Right. You have like
they were very crazy.
The little like break room, and that was a little side room next to the stock room, and that was
order food,
put it in there.
Graze. The previous year, working again.
Yeah,
so much.
It wasn't
cold
as
pizza.
Bad, but when I was working the pro shop, I noticed it was very crazy. It got insane.
Yeah, like peak time, I would say like 2010, 2011, even 2012. Like it was ridiculous. Like there were times where you'd get there at 9:30 in the morning or 10 o'clock in the morning to open up. And there were already like 30, 40 people in the parking lot waiting for you.
Yeah, I've had a lot of days like those. And this is before I had a key too, so I couldn't even unlock the door. I had to walk through the door and like knock on it. No one's here yet? Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I worked in the auto industry, we referred to the people who were waiting there in the morning as zombies. They'd be knocking at the gates.
Yeah.
Trying to rattle their way in.
No, that's what it was.
I had to entertain those people. Like, yeah, they'll be here in a minute.
Yeah.
Right. No, man, that's a case of like, sit in your car.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't open, I think, officially till 11. But we would get there at 10, because we were scheduled at 10 to get the shop open, get the field prepped.
No, it was 10:30. We had to be there at 10, open at 10:30.
It was a half hour to get everything, so...
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, it was just... Oof, those were the absolute...
It's crazy, because even times where you get there at 10 o'clock, and you know you don't open till 10:30, but yet there's still customers in your store, because somebody had to make a sale for a can of green gas at $12.
Right.
Actually,
all the time.
So like, I get like, you know, that's doing the customer goodwill.
It's really not, though. They'll wait another 10 minutes outside.
Yeah.
It's not a huge deal.
Actually, this kind of brings up what I brought up before we started recording. Like, this is, you know, what kind of starts that whole disdain against, you know, the airsoft industry. And, you know, us working in the airsoft industry, thinking it's going to be a great thing and starting to hate it. Because on Long Island, it seems there's a huge customer base for airsoft. And, like, those busy days just wear you out. You kind of, like, see that, like,
I mean, I
guess, side of airsoft that you just didn't want to see.
Until you actually brought that up, I didn't really think about it. Like, I forget how populated we are sometimes.
Yeah.
Like I just, like, I forget about it. Yeah. I'm like, oh, shit, like, you know, we're more populated than some states.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And most, like, fields don't have a shop, too. We have
a
shop.
Kind of a hermit kingdom. Like, to get off of Long Island, it's two bridges.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You have to make a trip out of it.
The only other field I've seen that got as busy as we do is Stryker in New Jersey.
Okay.
That's really it. Other than that, it's mostly outdoor fields. You know, people go out there, the guns break. Sure. Well, whatever, guns break.
Even for Stryker, right, they're pretty much like there's no one else sort of in that region that they're in that area, right?
Right.
Yeah.
They're kind of isolated, so that creates a market for them.
It does, but then you also got to think of the other fields that did pop up on Long Island around that time.
Well, that's the next talking point.
Yeah,
so.
This is a fun one.
This is a good one. So we had... Was it Modern Airstrike out in Holbrook?
At first, it was
Armed Forces
Arena.
Armed Forces, that's what it was.
Armed Forces Arena.
Yes.
Armed Forces Arena, AFA. I remember those shitlords.
In Holbrook.
That is like the definition of a scummy, dangerous environment.
Yep. Yes.
Yep.
Then there was...
Modern Airstrike. I think came after that.
Modern Airstrike was the one in Lindenhurst.
Yeah, Lindenhurst.
Yeah.
There was...
And then Ricochet, and that was it.
Yeah, Ricochet was the most recent one, and they seem like pretty alright dudes, because they got, you know...
They're still there. They kind of hold their own.
Yeah, right, they have a bit of a following to them.
Yeah.
I mean, so, Armed Forces was, like, the size of my basement, basically.
I forget where it was, but
Holbrook.
Yeah,
it was Holbrook.
Okay.
It was in, like,
never
a place that I'm pretty sure caught fire once.
Twice.
They really close quarters... They allowed full auto, any rate of fire, no limits. They didn't chrono.
I don't think
they had
there
two
was
levels
velocity.
Though, and that was their claim to fame.
Oh,
they built like a plywood, like,
plywood ramps and ladders. It
was just so not to code.
No,
it's funny too because like there was like they had a following. They had people who were like, oh, because it was like kids who had been kicked out of Strike Force basically.
Well, because they pretty much cornered the market on the 12 and 13 year old crowd that were like. You need to stop acting the way you're doing or we're going to kick you out. And then when we kicked them out, they would go to Armed Forces and being like, yeah, so much better than Strike Force. And then when they got shut down because they weren't to code and were posing a health risk to their players.
To code? I mean, you had the owner, like... He passed out drunk, like, in his car in the front of the store on multiple occasions. Like,
between
he was...
the ranting... The drunken social media rants on their Facebook page.
Oh,
yes, those were good.
So like the
and
owners...
coming directly at Strikeforce in some of those with calling us out. That was
like,
pretty lulzy.
To the name.
Oh,
like,
I remember seeing
naming the owner by name, Strikeforce Sports, you know, like everything. It was
a good time.
Yeah,
it was definitely
kept
a good
it interesting.
Time.
Kept us on our toes.
Yeah.
Modern Airstrike, they just kind of did their thing. They didn't
Modern Airstrike tried to clone Strikeforce, like, in my opinion.
I would say that's fair.
They got former warehouse space that had, you know, a small office up front. They converted the office area.
I was talking more about on the field part, because I remember I was talking to the owner of that. I think he was, like, talking about some field he saw in California. I think it was called, like, Tax City or something like that.
Yeah,
he wanted to mimic that, except more...
Well, field,
you know,
design-wise, it's whatever.
Like,
I mean, it's more just concept-wise.
Yeah,
you walk in, you got the pro shop, you got a little staging area.
But to me, it always came across as being, like, Walmart Strikeforce.
Yeah, it was...
Like, he didn't have the same name brand guns. And actually, one of the guys I knew, Jake...
Yes.
Worked for him for a little bit. And so Jake was like, you should talk... to Megalo and Schultz and Tony, you know, to find out, like, what you guys should stock. And, like, we went and we're like, you know, you need to get, you know, the Jinji Combat Machines as your entry guns. You need to get, you know, the D-Boys, you know, all the crap that would have sold pretty well. And instead, he went and bought, like, What was the one with the S? Three letters. SRC.
SRC.
No. He had like a load of SRC guns, and it was like nothing that you actually wanted to buy.
An ICS.
But he did have, good. I will say this, at that point, he had the best tech on Long Island. Because when Jake was a working tech, he was a good gun tech.
Okay.
He was good, he was just a little too slow.
Yeah.
That was our issue with him.
He still cared too much about the end product. Like,
yeah.
He was still doing it like when I would tech on guns on the side. Where I care about the person who's getting this, and I care about the experience they're going to have with it.
Yeah.
Not a production tech.
Right. And I mean...
They could have monetized that better, too.
Yeah.
Demo is a production... But you do good work. You're just a freak, all right?
Yeah. That's,
no one else does 70 guns a week and has, like, no comeback.
Yeah.
True.
I only get, like, a few comebacks, but it's like those guys who, like, come in. It's like, yeah, I want, like, 40 rounds a second. Like, sir, this is a JG.
John, you
get
used to get
crap out of here.
The comebacks that you would get, like, I ripped my battery cable out, or like my motor wire came off.
Yeah, but it's usually the guys who have the gun aids, as I would refer to them.
Gun aids.
Yeah. The gun hiv.
Yeah.
Full blown gun hiv.
The gun hiv. But yeah, Jake was a solid tech.
Yeah.
He just wasn't.
So like in
fast.
My opinion, they had the pieces to like to succeed well.
Yes.
And I think they just failed to pick up on them.
Pretty much.
But, you know, to me, they were Walmart Strikeforce. They were the closest thing that Strikeforce had to an actual competitor in terms of what they could have been.
I would
agree.
Yeah.
I'll agree to that.
That's fair. And Ricochet, I mean, they've just been kind of doing their thing. My only gripe with them is their location is just weirds me the hell out.
Yeah, it's a weird spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are they still in the flea market?
Yep.
They are.
Oh, God.
So what they have is the spot in the basement of the flea market. That's their field. It's got a decent, like, they have a nice setup for their staging area, miscellaneous BBs. And then on the main floor of the flea market, that's where they have their pro shop.
Okay.
So it's, to me, I don't like it being in a flea market. That's my only detractor
for it.
It's super
sketch.
Well, I mean,
like, it looks like if you're there to buy, like, drugs.
You gotta think, I mean, one, it's, ironically, that flea market does have the words bizarre on the front of it. So,
sure.
Like, it makes me think of, like, the old Indiana Jones movies.
Yeah.
But also, Hotspot started in a flea market.
Yeah.
Claudio had his booth or whatever there until he got enough money to make a storefront.
Still around?
Still around. They did downsize, unfortunately.
Okay.
Mostly because of Sandy.
Okay.
Right.
They weren't able to recoup off the damage.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
then,
they're in Long Beach. It's,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
They lost
a
fuck ton of inventory.
Oceanside,
yeah.
that was literally underwater.
Oceanside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I guess you want to go over the ones that are no longer around? Because I can think of two.
None of them are around.
Stores-wise or field-wise? What are we talking
stores.
About? I mean, there's Long Island Airsoft, which, you know, rest in peace. That was one of the OGs.
Yep.
And then Eagle Eye.
Oh, God.
We're less than a quarter mile from the historic location of Eagle Eye Airsoft.
That's true.
Eagle Sty.
Yeah.
Doug Sty.
Yeah.
How short was Eagle Eye open for?
They were at least a year.
I
want to
say probably about 18 months.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I think just shy of 2 years, yeah. But again, they had their own player base.
Yeah.
They were the outdoor guys, the high velocity guys. They weren't CQB guys.
Yeah.
Right.
So it worked out that, you know, granted, yeah, they were kind of close in location-wise.
Location.
Yeah. But they had their own player base. They had the outdoor guys that were like, oh, I'm going to run G3s. I'm going to long barrel G3s.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, where at Strikeforce, nobody saw that because that wasn't a popular gun.
Right.
For
I mean,
indoor.
We carried a certain subset of it just to kind of mix it up, but, you know, when you have a field attached to your pro shop, it's kind of hard to not tailor your inventory to what you know people are going to buy and go use right away.
Exactly.
So.
No, and I can fully understand that.
Yeah.
It's just lame.
I mean, you can only see so many fucking 10.5 M4s.
Yeah. Honestly, that's actually the first thing. I'm like, you can only see so many CQBRs.
Yeah.
But then again, it is Long Island. Everybody has a CQBR. So,
yeah.
at least one CQBR of some sort of type.
It's funny,
true.
Too, because the market actually just kind of, like, the entire airsoft market and manufacturing
is
kind of
it's
consolidated
it's
to
it's ARs and AKs.
Yeah, ARs, AKs, a whole CQB vibe.
Like, does anyone actually produce an MP5 AEG anymore?
Just GFC.
VFC.
No, G&G does make it. You just can't get them in the U.S., unfortunately.
VFC holds licensing through Umarex.
Okay.
Which, the VFCs are pretty meh. The G&Gs were...
They still have that wonky mechanical.
I was
going to
say, the G&G top techs were pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, I had one. It was super accurate for what it was. I miss
and honestly, guns. Even the Echo, the Task Force Black.
Oh, that
was a, oh, with the two gearboxes.
That was like
the Master Series.
That was the best deal in airsoft, in my opinion.
I think it was like $325 for the gun and two gearboxes.
Like, I thought it was like $275.
No, it was $275 for the Task Force Black. It was $325 for the. You paid $50 and you got another gearbox lower setup.
Yes. You just had to pop out the two pins. And,
yeah. It was cool. Indoor and outdoors. Two different classes.
No, that was
Classic Army clone. So if you got like all the Classic Army accessories, they fit.
Yeah.
You know what's also fun about Classic Army accessories? They fit the GSG-5.
Yeah. Fun fact.
Not that I'm advocating anyone to do that.
Yes. For those of you that don't know, the GSG-5 is the clone 22. MP5 nonsense.
Yeah.
Fun stories with those, but we can't share them.
Right.
Classic Army parts, the external parts do totally fit.
Yeah, the lighted foregrip and the collapsible stock.
We gotta edit that out.
Fit a GSG-5. Not that I've ever done that. I'm just saying, based on my internet research.
Classic
Army doesn't even make their MP5.
Based on research alone.
100% research alone.
Yep.
Sort of into webs. Must be true.
100%.
But to put a pin in this topic, let's close it out with our best memories from working in the airsoft, you know, working in airsoft in the retail side or the industry in general. Demo, take it away.
Best memory? I would say go both with the tech department and the retail store. It's kind of seeing, like, you know, the people you helped out kind of make that choice for them. It's like, hey, you should, you know, do this particular gun or set of gear. You're really going to like it. You know, they come back like a month or two later and it's like, wow, good call. Like, this stuff is awesome. I like that. Like, there's those moments where, you know, people are very, you know, grateful for, you know, the recommendations you made to them and, you know, the work you've done for them. Like, tech department wise, I've gotten a decent amount of that too. Like, when I upgrade a product, like, wow, this thing is great. I love it. I mean, it could go the opposite way, too. Just, like, worst memories would be, like, worked on this.
We're ending on a positive note. Just best memories. Just best memories.
Yeah. It would be that. But, like I said, it can go both ways.
Fair enough. Right.
Dave, your best?
Okay, so I can't really get fully into this, but the people that were around it, they'll understand if they listen. DJ Khaled's All I Do Is Win.
Oh god.
And a stack of money.
Oh god. Okay.
So we'll leave it at that. That was probably one of my favorite memories. But just like, I met a lot of good people in this. I mean, met you guys. I mean, John, you and I go back fucking almost 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, met some of my closest friends through airsoft.
Yeah.
That's going on almost 10 years. And it's gross, isn't it?
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's always been a positive thing. And just, I'd probably stay with that. I'll stick with those.
All right.
It's pretty solid.
I mean, mine would kind of, in that same vein, it's my favorite memory is just some of the shenanigans that happened working at the store. During, like, especially the first fucking Black Friday we did at Strikeforce, where, for people that don't realize, we closed at 10, only to reopen at, like, 6 in the fucking morning.
Oh,
so God. All the pro shop staff slept there.
We debated that a little bit. It wasn't as crazy.
No, it definitely wasn't as crazy.
No, and it's just kind of, even through all, like, the craziness that happened at the store, problem customers, it's the joking around and bullshitting that would happen in those, like, moments of chaos with my coworkers. That's probably my best, like, the best memories I have from working in the industry. It's like, I don't give a shit about the business side of it. Like, I'm not going into airsoft to get rich. Like, it's more the good people I met along the way, the friends that I've made, and just the craziness that happened in those moments. We can take a quick little break here and come back for topic two. So we're going to start our second topic of the night. It ties into the first one, but this is how choosing to try and make money or monetize your hobby affects your desire to actually do said hobby. Because I know I personally had this happen to me. I'm sure Dave and Demo have as well. Megalo, I don't know if there's any other things you've been involved in, but you kind of... Yeah. So it's not unique to Airsoft, but if you... I know a lot of people like to think that, hey, if I can make money doing the hobby that I spend my money on, that would be a great thing, because now I'm no longer just lighting money on fire. However, when all of a sudden you're living and breathing your hobby day in and day out, your desire to do said thing, in our case Airsoft, goes down the shitter. And I have my own personal experiences and all that, but let's go round table again, open it up, forum, and...
I mean, where it definitely goes down the shitter, it's like there were times where everyone was like, oh, let's go out and play on Sunday. And it was, you know, the Friday, Saturday nights, murder shifts, open to close both days.
It's like fuck
fucking 27 hours on between Friday and Saturday. It's like, I don't want to get up. I don't want to go see the people that I've literally spent more time with than I have at home. Like, yeah. I want to go and, like, enjoy myself. Yes, it's going to be a beautiful day. Quorum's fucking waiting for me. I've got plenty of 2.7s to blast some kids in the face with. But I don't want to go. I don't want anything to do with these people. Like, I want to have my time to myself. Granted, yes, there were times where we came in on our days off and worked for no goddamn reason.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things. It's like, I want to stay away, but I can't.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, when it's where all your friends also are.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah, so pretty much. Hang out
with all of your friends all at once, pretty much. Like, it comes in, you know, you deal with, you know, maybe having to help sell some guns or deal with some customers.
That's fair. I mean, my personal thoughts and experience are similar to Dave's, where it's, I've worked and helped customers for 4 or 5 days, maybe 6 this week. The last thing I want to do is have to put on the, even though I'm my own person, when I go to a field, I'm still a representative of Strike Force.
Yeah.
I don't want to put on the happy customer face, you know, customer service face, and deal with that nonsense. Because God forbid there's some bullshit where someone's like, hey, aren't you the manager at Strike Force? And I'm like, you know, you just scummed me. And I'm like, I didn't want to deal with that other than big games or national events. So, like, playing locally or playing, unless it was, like, privately at Strike Force or, like, a big game at Quorum, I had zero desire to actually put on my shit and go play Airsoft. What about you, Demo?
Pretty much boils down to the same thing, especially once I started, you know, teching a majority of the guns at Strike Force. Like, I might... it basically came down to, if I went out to Quorum or played at Strike Force one day and I ran into someone whose gun may have broke due to, you know, shit happens. Airsoft guns aren't the most reliable things in the world, but I always do my best to make sure they work properly once they leave. And, you know, I run into that person there and they start asking me questions and I'm not on the clock. I'm just like, well, damn, work just followed me to my downtime.
Yeah. Oh, I 100% agree with that, because there would be times, like, if I did roll out to Quorum with the group, someone would be like, hey, remember that gun that I asked you about, like, 3 weeks ago? Is that in stock yet? And I'm like, for fuck's sake, dude. Like, call the shop. Like, this is me time. I'm not on the clock. Let me be a person, not a sales rep right now. Yeah. And that's, that kind of barrier doesn't click with the majority of people.
Because, again, I think maybe in the back of some people's heads, they're like, oh, he's here, so that means the store is here.
Yeah, no, that's what it was. They view you as just an extension of Strike Force. Yes. Doesn't matter where you are. Like, thankfully, I never ran into anyone outside of Airsoft events.
Oh.
But, like...
Oh, yeah, going far away from the state.
I ran into customers at local stores, Best Buys and stuff like that.
Oh, no, hard
pass. And they would be like, hey, this, that, I was like... I literally palmed them out of the way. I was like, nah, talk to me when I'm at work. Nah, that's just not going to happen. Absolutely not. So it's crazy that people don't have that barrier. It's the second they see you, it's like, oh my God. Like you said, did you get that gun in? Son, like, what? Relax.
Right. Like, I will gladly bend over backwards to help you when I'm at the store. I have no problem doing that. But when I'm not there, do not bring that bullshit into my life.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, work is work. You have to remember that. At one point, you know, we have to, you know, just hang it all up and go home and go about our normal lives.
Yeah,
you know, it's true. Enjoy our hobbies too. Like, even if you're working in the airsoft industry, you just want to go out and have fun and not constantly be, you know, hassled about, you know, work-related stuff. I mean, I also feel like that happens a lot to, like, the e-celebs. Like,
yeah.
Well, because if you're an e-celeb, you're never not working.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an airsoft feel like as you're never not working.
At one point, it might have to get to you. Like, the YouTuber, Level Cap, it got to him. He stopped playing.
So, like, my whole thing with the e-celebs is getting back on this again. Seems to be a constant topic. Like,
yep.
If you're an e-celeb, you're selling your personality.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you are the product. You're never not on sale.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the airsoft field, if you make your money monetizing YouTube videos, you're never not working when you're on an airsoft field.
Yeah.
That's just the...
Not working, period.
Pretty much.
I mean, at least when you're facing other players or potential like viewerships, you're never not working, and that's just the unfortunate reality of trying to make money on YouTube in airsoft. But like for local players or anyone who works at a store, it's like if you see them at your local field, give them some breathing room, because I guarantee you the last thing on their mind is dealing with whatever issue you're gonna bring to them. And even if it's just bullshitting about airsoft, for the most part it's like we do that for our jobs to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Like, let them do their thing with their crew. You know, by all means, come up to them, say hi, you know, thanks for doing what you're doing, but just quick hi and leave. Don't,
hey, you know, when are you working next week so I know when to be in? Like, if I'm going to ask you a question.
Right.
You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, microtransactions in person as far as your interactions with them. Like, don't just try and strike up a 20-minute long conversation with them, because that's the last thing they probably want.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Even like, you know, etiquette for going to a store. Don't be a fucking zombie outside of the store at opening. Like, nobody wants to deal with that.
Yeah, don't show up a half hour before they open and expect to go in and out before they open.
Pretty much.
You're an asshole.
So, if it comes down to that also, be cool.
Yeah.
Like, don't be that guy. It's like, oh, well, I can buy this $5 less online. I'm going to tell you to go buy it online. As a matter of fact, get two of them. I don't care.
Or
it's like, come on. You're really going to argue over $5?
Like, I'm at the point financially where it's like, if I'm buying something brick and mortar, I'm buying it brick and mortar for either convenience or because I wanted to physically see it first.
Yes.
100%.
And I want to reward you for stocking the thing that I wanted.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I 100% agree with that.
You
know, it's
buying what I bought yesterday. I could have saved $5 buying it online, the case.
Yeah.
But screw it. I had it yesterday.
Right.
And I got to see it. I got to say, yes, this is what I want. I know this will fit what I want it to fit.
Yep.
You know, and that's something that, like, has a value to it. If you don't have that value and you're just shopping for the product, then buy it online. Why'd you even go down to the store?
Yeah.
Right. Like, don't waste the sales rep's time and
especially
energy.
In, like, a non-haggle industry.
Yeah.
Like, I get it.
Yeah.
If you're going in someplace that's built on haggling, like, car sales or most commission-based sales jobs.
So, actually, speaking of that, I do have a fun story that did actually happen within the past year. So, I was working a Saturday night. Me and one other person were there. And this guy, I sell him whatever. You know, bottom of the receipt says all sales are final. So, he comes up. He's like, hey, so I always get something for free when I buy stuff from here. And I was like, cool. I don't know who you are, so I'm not giving you anything for free. Because I don't get anything for free. And I work here. And he's like, yeah, well, you know what? I want to return it. I'm returning this product and this, that, and the other. I was like, oh, I'm sorry, sir. The bottom of the receipt says all sales are final. So, unfortunately, there's nothing I can do. Dude stormed out. Fuck you. Fuck this place. Blah, blah, blah. I was like, sorry, sir. There's nothing I can do about this. And it's like, really? Like, you come up. It's, come on.
Especially like, after you've made the sale.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah, I hate those. I got...
Like, it'd be one thing if the guy was buying, like, a gun, and you were like, and you know, be like, oh, you know, I'll throw in a bag of BBs then.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, I'll toss
you
a can of
made the sale, can
of gas, or you know, thing of BBs. It's like, oh, it's your first gun, cool. Like, I got you.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. But I've never seen this guy before in my life, and he's coming up here depending. You know,
and again,
I get free stuff. It's
even if you're fishing for free stuff, like, don't demand it, because like,
Yeah.
The moment demand something, I know I want to work against you to make sure you never.
I will literally
whenever I'm working on a sale, just like, well, what can you do for me? Like, I'm just.
Yeah.
It's always in the middle of the sale too, where I'm just like kind of describing the product, what it's going to do, what to expect. There's always like that guy. I think my favorite was it doesn't really tie into the what can you do for me? But
yeah.
I've got this guy. He came in from like Jersey or something like that. He said he was sponsored by Vulcan.
Oh.
Or something like that.
Which time?
It was like a Thursday night, so you weren't going to be working. Okay. Or something like that.
There were a couple like that.
I'm sponsored by Vulcan, so I usually get Vulcan BBs for free. I'm just like, not from here. I mean, Vulcan didn't let us know, you know, we're supposed to give you anything or anybody anything. You know,
yeah.
You just buy it from us. If you get anything for free from Vulcan,
it's going
to
come.
It's going to come from Vulcan.
From Vulcan, or they're going to like send it to the store to drop ship to you or something.
Yeah. Who has a budget to give away free stuff?
Yeah.
Just saying. Industry stuff.
Yeah, I have one of those,
like, how common are sponsorships in airsoft?
So I know, not common at all.
I say, like, some random people, like, I know I sold a clone PTW to a kid who was Vulcan sponsored.
Yeah.
Vulcan is more heavily sponsored because they're trying to grow their airsoft footprint.
Okay.
But if you're talking about, like, any of the major OEMs, like PTS Syndicate, Nola Gay, and like the big partnerships within, you know, the NatOps that you see, they don't sponsor players because, think about it,
there's no reason to
because what is an airsoft player that has that following? How are they going to monetize what the business isn't actually doing for them?
Yeah, especially if the player
for the same budget that you would sponsor
place.
Them, you just send it to some show reviewer who's going to churn you out some extra sales.
Exactly. So it's
there's a lot of those in airsoft.
Yep.
Yeah.
Airsoft is probably one of the worst industries when it comes to finding objective reviews.
Oh, 100%. It's all
research
done. They're almost like non-existent.
90% of reviews on YouTube for airsoft are unboxings. They're not reviews.
Yeah, they're unboxings, like day one with the product. Oh, it could do this. This thing is awesome. It's never like day 30 or... You know,
speaking
3 months in.
If you'd like a has-been airsoft review in your company, go fuck yourself. But if you're an individual person, you've got a gun that you want us to review, we'll figure out some way for you to send it to us. I'll get drunk on camera, breaking it, and then tearing it apart and telling you what broke.
We're not going to do that.
Yeah, that's probably not a great idea.
We're not going to do that. Judge is ruling right now.
Yeah, that's two-thirds. You're voted out. Sorry.
The only thing is...
You need a supermajority.
Oh, yeah.
This is a supermajority.
You need a three-fist compromise.
I always wanted there to be more...
Take
honest.
Your Brexit and get the fuck out.
The other thing is, I always wanted there to be more honest airsoft reviews. I guess, you know, that we could save that for, like, maybe another topic another day.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, it's amazing how many guns are the best gun that they've ever shot. And it's like, really?
Yeah, we can get into a whole thing about shilling an airsoft another day.
Yeah, that's we're going down a rabbit hole right now.
If you
now.
Can't tell by the duration in my voice, this is a very steep slope.
Yeah.
Because I have a decent amount to say about that. And like, because getting into airsoft as late as I did, you guys started, you know, way before I did.
Yeah.
It finding
See, what's
the,
funny is,
the gun to go with was difficult.
I started in the era when, like, there were actually objective reviews on the internet.
We started in the era when the internet really wasn't the internet yet.
I still remember, on the topic of airsoft reviews,
dial-up.
Arnie's Airsoft, the What M Best Gun thread, which just explained that pretty much every TM shoots the same out of the box.
Yeah.
And just pick the one you like the look of the best.
Pretty much.
Yeah,
I know,
such simpler days.
My TM MP5 shot roughly the same as the TM M4.
Yep.
But yet your TM MP5 shot through a glass bottle.
Yeah, with 2.7s.
No, with 2.3s. XL 2.3s.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, XL 2.3s were hard.
I'm aware.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, kids these days don't know about, like, different BB hardnesses. Like,
yep.
Yeah. Anyways, let's put this episode to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
It's getting a little ranty.
Yeah, it's getting a little ranty. We're going almost part two. So before we go...
we're getting onto the B-reel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for anyone who hasn't already, by all means, please check out our social media various outlets on Facebook at...
Has Been Airsoft Podcast on Facebook.
Okay.
Our Instagram has been Airsoft _ podcast.
Okay.
I know Jungle's got one at HBA_Jungle.
Yep.
Actually, Megalo just made one for the first time ever. He has no idea what he's doing.
Literally no clue.
Send him terrible things at HBA_Megalo. That's MEGLO.
Please slide into his DMs with dick pics.
That's right.
No, please do not let this happen at
Do
all.
It. Do it. You won't.
Actually, no, I will reciprocate dick pic for dick pic.
What is it, send to receive? It's S2R. What
is this, Grindr?
ASL, S2R. All right, so...
Instead of getting dicks back, you get pictures of people named Dick.
Oh, okay. All right. That's valid, I guess. Yeah. Other than that, the social media, that's our outlets. Reach out to us. We actually did get... We got a couple of people, you know, chiming in on stuff, which is awesome. We have one guy that actually wrote us today.
From across the pond.
From across the pond.
Yeah.
I apologize if I butcher your name. Amur. A-M-E-R. I mean, I would assume so. But,
Amur?
I guess Amur. So I apologize for butchering your name. But yeah, hello from across the pond. Been listening for almost since the start. You know, great niche podcast about Seedsoft. And it's...
Seedsoft?
Speedsoft. Yeah. But, yeah, man, like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Keep listening. Shout us out.
I
listen
like the
to
cheeky
us.
Sense of humor.
Yes. Because he's a cheeky bastard. But, yeah, reach out. Shoot us a message. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. We're probably going to disagree with you. But, yeah, definitely suggest topics, too. It's going to be good.
Again,
have a good time.
Always up for suggestions.
Absolutely. I think that's everything. I think we can call that a night.
Yeah,
on that
wrapped up.
On that note,
we're going to put this one to bed.
Yeah, fade to black.
Boom.